Testimony 29, Chapter 1, The Judgment.
On the morning of October 23, 1879, about 2 o'clock, the Spirit of the Lord rested upon me, and I beheld scenes in the coming judgment. Language fails me in which to give an adequate description of the things which passed before me and of the effect they had upon my mind. The great day of the execution of God's judgment seemed to have come. 10,000 times 10,000 were assembled before a large throne, upon which was seated a person of majestic appearance. Several books were before him, and upon the covers of each was written in letters of gold which seemed like a burning flame of fire, Ledger of Heaven. One of these books, containing the names of those who claimed to believe the truth, was then opened. Immediately I lost sight of the countless millions about the throne, and only those who were professedly children of the light and of the truth engaged my attention. As these persons were named, one by one, and their good deeds mentioned, their countenances would light up with a holy joy that was reflected in every direction. But this did not seem to rest upon my mind with the greatest force. Another book was opened, wherein were recorded the sins of those who professed the truth. Under the general heading of selfishness came every other sin. There were also headings over every column, and underneath these, opposite each name, were recorded in their respective columns the lesser sins. Under covetousness came falsehood, theft, robbery, fraud, and avarice. Under ambition came pride and extravagance. Jealousy stood at the head of malice, envy, and hatred. And intemperance headed a long list of fearful crimes, such as lasciviousness, adultery, indulgence of animal passions, and so forth. As I beheld, I was filled with inexpressible anguish and exclaimed, "Who can be saved? Who will stand justified before God? Whose robes are spotless? Who are faultless in the sight of a pure and holy God?" As the Holy One upon the throne slowly turned the leaves of the ledger, and his eyes rested for a moment upon individuals, his glance seemed to burn into their very souls, and at the same moment every word and action of their lives passed before their minds as clearly as though traced before their vision in letters of fire. Trembling seized them, and their faces turned pale. Their first appearance, when around the throne, was that of careless indifference. But how changed their appearance now! The feeling of security is gone, and in its place is a nameless terror. A dread is upon every soul, lest he shall be found among those who are wanting. Every eye is riveted upon the face of the one upon the throne. And as his solemn, searching eye sweeps over that company, there is a quaking of heart, for they are self-condemned without one word being uttered. In anguish of soul, each declares his own guilt, and with terrible vividness sees that by sinning he has thrown away the precious boon of eternal life. One class was registered as cumberers of the ground. As the piercing eye of the judge rested upon these, their sins of neglect were distinctly revealed. With pale, quivering lips, they acknowledged that they had been traitors to their holy trust. They had had warnings and privileges, but they had not heeded nor improved them. They could now see that they had presumed too much upon the mercy of God. True, they had not such confessions to make as had the vile and basely corrupt, but, like the fig tree, they were cursed because they bore no fruit, because they had not put to use the talents entrusted to them. This class had made self supreme, laboring only for selfish interests. They were not rich toward God, not having responded to his claims upon them. Although professing to be servants of Christ, they brought no souls to him. Had the cause of God been dependent on their efforts, it would have languished. For they not only withheld the means lent them of God, but they withheld themselves. But these could now see and feel that in occupying an irresponsible position in reference to the work and cause of God, they had placed themselves on the left hand. They had had opportunity, but would not do the work that they could and should have done. The names of all who professed the truth were mentioned. Some were reproved for their unbelief, others for having been slothful servants. They had allowed others to do the work in the Master's vineyard and to bear the heaviest responsibilities, while they were selfishly serving their own temporal interests. Had they cultivated the abilities God had given them, they could have been reliable burden-bearers working for the interest of the Master. Said the judge, "All will be justified by their faith and judged by their works." How vividly then appeared their neglect, and how wise the arrangement of God in giving to every man a work to do to promote the cause and save his fellow men. Each was to demonstrate a living faith in his family and in his neighborhood by showing kindness to the poor, sympathizing with the afflicted, engaging in missionary labor, and by aiding the cause of God with his means. But like Meroz, the curse of God rested upon them for what they had not done. They had loved that work which would bring the greatest profit in this life, and opposite their names in the ledger devoted to good works, there was a mournful blank. The words spoken to these were most solemn. "You are weighed in the balances and found wanting. You have neglected spiritual responsibilities because of busy activity in temporal matters, while your very position of trust made it necessary that you should have more than human wisdom and greater than finite judgment. This you needed in order to perform even the mechanical part of your labor. And when you disconnected God and His glory from your business, you turned from His blessing." The question was then asked, "Why have you not washed your robes of character and made them white in the blood of the Lamb?" God sent His Son into the world not to condemn the world, but that through Him it might be saved. My love for you has been more self-denying than a mother's love. It was that I might blot out your dark record of iniquity and put the cup of salvation to your lips that I suffered the death of the cross, bearing the weight and curse of your guilt. The pangs of death and the horrors of the darkness of the tomb I endured, that I might conquer him who had the power of death, unbar the prison house, and open for you the gates of life. I submitted to shame and agony because I loved you with an infinite love, and would bring back my wayward wandering sheep to the paradise of God, to the tree of life. That life of bliss which I purchased for you at such a cost, you have disregarded. Shame, reproach, and ignominy, such as your Master bore for you, you have shunned. The privileges He died to bring within your reach have not been appreciated. You would not be partaker of His sufferings, and you cannot now be partaker with Him of His glory. Then were uttered these solemn words, "He that is unjust, let him be unjust still, and he that is righteous, let him be righteous still, and he that is holy, let him be holy still." The book then closed, and the mantle fell from the person on the throne, revealing the terrible glory of the Son of God. The scene then passed away, and I found myself still upon the earth, inexpressibly grateful that the day of God had not yet come, and that precious probationary time is still granted us in which to prepare for eternity.